This is a bean emergency. Please try to remain calm.
Hello. Very slight, minor bean emergency this week. Henry bought a new microphone. Doesn't work. His old one doesn't work. We recorded using a different microphone. That didn't work. So unfortunately, for Henry's bits, we're using a backup recording of the Zoom call, and the audio isn't that great. Then, mystifyingly, as you'll hear, when we get to the correspondence section at the end, his microphone does start to work, for reasons none of us understand.
Spurbsy.
Anyway, it's still good fun. And a little content warning, because of the theme of this week's episode, it gets a little bit racy, so I know sometimes people listen to this with their kids. Maybe this one's a bit adult. Anyway, enjoy the show!
Quick little technical thing.
Mm. Yeah.
We can cut this out or just include it and stick a Pompidou on the front.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a very cynical attitude to the Pompidou section.
Yeah, well, come on. We're all grown-ups now. Come on. We use the Pompidou.
As a sticking plaster.
We use it as a sticking plaster to solve problems we can't be asked to get down dirty with. Yeah? Come on.
So let's hear it.
And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou.
I'm not hearing my own voice through the headphones. Is that normal in my situation?
Yes, basically.
That's just my cross to bear, isn't it? Okay, fine.
Yeah. So you should be able to kind of hear, you know, yourself half through your ears in the normal way, but I guess your ears are also blocked by the headphones.
So he has to listen through his nose.
Well, everyone knows if your ears, you know, if you lose your ears in an accident, your nose will compensate. Yeah, everyone knows that. All of the face orifices have that in their wheelhouse, don't they?
Yeah, just, right. Just sort of shuffle
stand
about.
Stand into the others.
Yeah.
Well, so if you get your mouth blown off, you can eat through your ears.
Yeah, well, you can, someone can feed noodles in, not everything necessarily. You have to be silly about it, Ben. You can't eat a lamb roast necessarily, but you could feed noodles through.
When it is very finely chopped, yeah.
Anything that's chopped down to a kind of silt can be funneled in with warm soapy water. You know, you want to clean it at the same time. So just warm soapy water.
Just slides on through.
Just slides it through.
Right. Okay.
And then that'll slide out of your nose, and the remainder will slide out of your nose. And if you've just got a small chin-mounted sieve, land in that, and you can keep any of those bits and recycle them through the other ear. Yeah, most decent gastropubs will offer that. Yeah. they'll normally have the setup near with the high chairs. They'll have all the
funnels and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Just help yourself to that in a board game, and you don't necessarily have to even bring the staff into it. But I've heard people, you can round a breadstick in, you wiggle it about, break it up, and then you pour hot tomato or warm tomato soup through.
Yeah.
And that's it's the nearest thing to a gazpacho. You know, these people can experience their wine tonight to them. Yeah. Obviously, if you look at the Mediterranean foods, most of them are tubular, aren't they? Generally, they'll be tubular. Things like spaghetti and noodles,
yeah.
Rice.
Penne was initially invented actually as a sort of as a delivery device, a mechanism rather than the food itself.
Yeah.
To help people with sort of poor aim.
That's right. You send down the fusilli first as a kind of
exactly.
You bore through with the fusilli just to make sure you got a nice clean path.
That's right.
It's a bit like putting up if you ever put up a picture frame or a heavy mirror.
Yeah,
it's like a roll plug.
Yeah, you bore through with the fusilli.
Put in the penne,
and then pulses. You line up a pea and you shoot it through. You just shoot it. your peas, your pulses.
Yeah, your prawns.
Cockles.
Yeah.
Prawns.
Orangina.
Orange. Orangina. Ouzo.
Well, the ouzo is at the end of the meal. That's again because it clears out the pipe at the end. So
yeah.
Does the pipes no any good? And then put a little match to it at the end and you're done. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Well, that's a nice little show off, is it? Sometimes the waiter will do that.
Yeah.
They'll supposed to do it. If you mention to the waiter it's your birthday, they'll get what is essentially a Malteser or the Italian version of a Malteser.
Maltese-o.
Malteser. Maltese-o with a little candle in it. And they'll carry that through with great pomp and then they'll ram the Malteser in your ear and the candle will be...
With a tiny cannon.
It's a tiny cannon, yeah. They shoot it right in.
You feel that ricocheting off your brain. It's a lovely feeling.
Nice moment.
Oh, it really wakes you up, doesn't it?
Right. Is it time access the Bean Machine?
Yeah,
okay.
I reckon.
This week's topic is... Romance.
Ooh, big one.
La 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 la. La 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 la.
Romance.
I think of the three of us, this is a big call.
Okay.
I feel like Henry embodies romance the most. I'm basing that on his marriage proposal taking place in Venice.
Oh, that is good.
The international home of romance.
Mm. But is proposing in Venice because, I mean, does that happen because you're inherently highly romantic or...
Or are you so unromantic exactly. that the only thing you can think of is to go to...
You've picked up your dummy's guide to romance from the library.
I Googled before... romance.
Exactly. Just said, whatever it is, do it in Venice.
What do you think of those people who do sort of quite complicated proposals?
The sort of underwater cave level.
What's that one?
Now that I say it, I don't even... It's possible that someone I know has done this, so I'm loath to cause offence. But I have certainly read about... someone proposing by going on a sort of a diving holiday and the day before sort of making themselves scarce and hiding a ring in a little underwater cave.
Oh, that's crazy.
And then the following day going on the dive with the person they're proposing to and then taking them to this underwater cave and going, oh, pointing, oh, look at this clam. Oh, let's open this clam.
It was in a clam.
Well, I don't know what it was inside. I don't know what they didn't inside a clam shell.
It feels very unethical to force it into a clam.
Or a box or whatever it was, but it was in the same location wherever they jammed it.
What would have been really dramatic is you go down the day before, you feed it to an eel.
Ah, oh, that's good.
Who in turn is eaten by a shark, who in turn is eaten by an orca. You then train that orca to be a display orca in a sea life centre in Florida. You go to Florida, there's a tragic accident. Involving a trainer, the orca is put down. You get tickets to the autopsy. At which point,
they chop open the orca. There's a live shark inside.
Still a live shark.
The shark bites your arm off. So that point, you think you've been victim to the only land-based shark attack, the first ever land-based shark attack.
Yeah.
You pass out.
Mm-hmm.
You wake up in hospital the next day.
With a bionic arm. Yeah.
Got a bionic arm. Your real arm is you ask as you would if you can just see a real arm or if it's been disposed of yet, just to say your goodbyes.
Yeah, it's in a glass display case above your bed.
You notice two things that are unusual about the arm.
Mm.
One is it's got a ring on. It's got a wedding ring on the finger.
Yeah.
So obviously.
So you've proposed yourself.
And it's a wedding ring as well. So we've gone straight through. The paperwork's been done.
While you're unconscious.
Witnesses have signed it. They've got the paperwork on the opposite wall. Pictures of you being wheeled into the wedding.
You've been wheeled through the entire wedding ceremony. You've missed out on the speeches. You've missed out on your dad crying.
The first dance was a bit of a damp squib.
Yeah, you've missed out on all the very expensive catering. A couple of cousins flew in from New Zealand. We've not seen them for 12 years. They've already gone home.
In a state of great distress.
Now, the arm.
Yes.
It's on a cabinet, right?
Yeah.
But it's your arm and it's severed. But hang on, it's wriggling.
What? Wait a minute.
It's wriggling. It's still attached. Your body's over. They pull away the fake, all the curtains around it. Your body's still attached to the hand. Well, to your arm.
What? Well,
it's just your head. Your head's come off.
Oh, your arm wasn't severed at all. Your head was severed.
Head was severed. Your head's being kept alive with wires and organic technology they've
nutrient
developed.
Nutrient fluids.
Yeah.
It's been nutrient a sort of soup bowl of sort of electric nutrient fluid.
Yeah. And actually,
and then your wife comes in, or who you think is your wife. She walks over to the arm and to the torso. She pulls a sheet off the top. In place of your head is the eel's head.
Oh.
She's married to the eel.
Because of a clara.
That's no longer your finger to have the ring on.
And you're like, what the hell's going on? This is disgusting. And she says, hey, come on, mate. It's 40:53.
Get with the program.
Program. Everyone's married to people with eel heads nowadays. Open curtains, she says. They're automatic now. The curtains just open.
Oh, wow.
You look out. London is full of people walking around with people with, in couples, and one person's got an eel head.
Yeah. And people enjoying sort of outdoor dining, but they're just sitting in their copper bowls and their heads, and that's it.
Yeah.
Just bobbing about.
All kinds of combos. So it turns out the shark did attack, right back to the beginning now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The shark did attack you. That shark attack happened. It was Cape Town, not far from the South Africa Science Institute.
SASI.
Yeah. And they were doing experiments in cryogenic storage, brain
stuff,
brain transplanting, etc. So your head, which had been bitten off the shark, was taken there, frozen, wrapped in wet towels initially. Then,
but clean. They would have been clean towels. They would have been wet, but they would have been clean. They're not wet because someone's just used them in the shower. That's very important so people know.
Wet dog towels.
Wet dog towels. But used on a clean dog. Yeah.
And anyway, they've been experimenting on your head for centuries now.
Mm.
That's why it's the future. But eventually, the political situation's changed. It's no longer ethical to do that.
Yeah.
So
your wife is still alive, somehow.
It's a long, long story, Ben. But
essentially, the artificial intelligence download of her is still alive, I think.
Exactly.
I see.
But she's married to the eel.
Was all this premeditated by the wife? So you thought, oh, I'm actually doing this this elaborate proposal, but she knew all along this was a long game for her in over 2,000 years' time. To marry an eel man.
She would have known that there are various points in the plan where things could have gone awry, I think.
She'd have
planned for different scenarios, different outcomes along the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you say, what kind of eel is that? And she says, that's a moray.
Oh.
And we're back to romance as a thing.
Come on.
Oh, wow.
Come on.
Holy Come moly.
On.
Professional comedy writer, Benjamin Partridge.
By the way, also, just a little footnote, though. Little footnote.
I'm available for all and any work.
Just a little footnote. She didn't actually get on with the eel, though, it turned out. And they divorced a few years later. They just didn't see to eye to eye on.
Ben, you could say something like, was he a bit of a cold fish here?
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And then,
yeah. Henry, was it because he was a bit of a cold fish?
Oh, that's Benjamin Partridge, comedy writer available.
Comedy writer.
Put it this way.
Now.
Put it this way. She was married to an eel, but in the bedroom, things weren't electric.
Oh! Oh.
Hello! Yeah? Also, because one of the problems was that as an eel, he reproduces by, initially swimming to the Caribbean. and then meeting up with thousands of other eels, and all of them, they all sort of
spunking into the sea.
They spunk into a huge sort of underwater ball of spunk.
Yeah, it complicates the usual just sort of Wednesday night lovemaking, doesn't it? You know,
exactly. Yeah.
The kids are at orchestra practice and judo and got a bit of time and
yeah.
It really slows it down when you've got to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So that became hard to manage.
Golly. And yet they said romance was dead, eh?
Would you say you're managing to keep the romance alive, Mike, in your family? Is that
my family? Yeah. Well, my mum and my dad, yeah, I send them aphrodisiacs on a regular basis. We've got a sort of monthly subscription. Yeah. And my sister and brother-in-law, it's all about whispering sweet nothings, really. I sort of
I've
got a little speaker. Yeah,
you've got to make an effort with these things.
Yeah. My family they are sexual beings, and it's important to remember that all the time.
Yeah.
And to encourage that. You know.
Mike, you obviously don't have to tell us it's a private thing. Mm. I don't think I've ever heard about when you proposed to your wife and what kind of setting was it? What kind of level of romance are we talking?
Mine wasn't in Venice. Mine was in Hay-on-Wye.
Okay.
Was it during the book festival?
It was...
You didn't propose during a Salman Rushdie talk, did you? That's quite romantic.
Yeah, he was blaring across Eastern Wales.
That'd be quite romantic if you turn to your partner during a Salman Rushdie talk at Hay and go, darling, if you just look in Salman Rushdie's mouth, and she'd go, well, there's nothing particularly going on with his mouth other than he's, you know, talking in a really interesting way about Midnight's Children.
Just step up to the stage now. Just put your left hand into his mouth all the way. Keep going until purchase on something.
Don't worry, he'll keep talking about Midnight's Children if you just do it stop slowly enough.
He's a pro. He won't lose his stride. Yeah. He's done thousands of these book festivals. Yeah.
Just find that dangly thing at the back of his mouth, the dangly bit.
Dangly
what's that
thing.
Called?
Yeah, it's dangling off his uvulus, tied in a knot. Yeah, it'll come off a treat. Yeah, it was like that. Are you're familiar with Hay-on-Wye? So you know, yes, there's that little sort of ruined castle up at the top, and it was in the courtyard at the top of there. And it was there was no one there, but there was an open door, which I kicked shut too hard, so it slammed quite abruptly. At which point, I was that side of the door. My future wife is then standing in the middle of this courtyard. There's no other clear escape points in an abandoned location. So that's quite threatening. I then went very earnest, and she was completely convinced that what I was about to do was dump her on a fortified hill in Wales and then just leave her there, is what she thought.
Well, no, but that can happen, you know, with proposals, because it's quite the build-up to a proposal is quite similar to a dumping.
Mm.
Because, as you say, everything gets very earnest.
Yeah.
Everything's quite serious. What something big's going to happen?
Yeah.
But Henry, you'd have to be a real monster to take someone on holiday to Venice, take them to a lovely bridge over the canal, and then dump them.
Yeah,
incredible move.
Yeah, the odds are against, aren't they?
Extreme dick move that would be.
But Hay-on-Wye, absolutely.
Hay-on-Wye. I mean, great place to dump slow. Someone. You can get back from Hay-on-Wye. You know, I mean, the buses are slow, but they are there. You know.
But also, moments after the dumping, as we've alluded to, they could be listening to a talk by, you know, Ian McEwan.
Yeah, it's going to sugar the pill, of course.
Did you go to one knee?
I did go on one knee.
Well done.
Oh, good work.
Well, is it, though, or is it, you know, I don't know. I think partly I did that. I was in two minds about whether or not that was a thing to do or not. But it was the moment I sort of registered in her face a look of panic. That something bad was coming her way. And at that point, I think I dropped to one knee just to try and signal as clearly as I possibly could that this was not a dumping. The risk is if someone thinks they're picking up the signals of a dumping, you know, some people might do a pre-dumping before they've been dumped. So the last thing I want to do is signal that I'm about, you know, to dump accidentally and then to find myself be dumped. Then, you know, before I'm halfway dropped to my knee, land on my knee and I've been dumped before I've hit the ground, you know.
Yeah, because she could go, before you say anything, I dump you, actually.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what? I don't think this is working, actually, either. So, and then the worst is, if in that time she then puts in an observation about you that can never ever be erased.
Crushing. Yeah.
I don't think it does work because of your smelly shoulders, Mike.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think it will work.
Which I've always known about. That's why I wear scented epaulettes wherever I go. But it still doesn't work.
And actually, because you've got athlete's shoulder as well. Yeah, is that Is that linked?
It's related. It's because of the. Yeah. It's because of the local humidity. Yeah, the high salt content is the. It means that certain very powerful yeasts thrive, yeah. And once they're there, yeah. They're very much the sort of Japanese knotweed of yeasts.
yeah. Yeah, really tough buggers, aren't they?
Real, they go deep, and you're not getting rid of them. Most evenings, my wife takes a shoulder chisel and a pumice and tries to get what she can off, but it's a losing battle every time.
What's good is that we've managed as a society to filter out the stage of romance where you have to beat someone else in a joust.
Yeah, there's no gauntlets anymore, are there?
No. It's very rare to win someone's hand in marriage. It's for the best, I think.
You tend to just get to a point in your 30s where you think we'd probably best just do that now, I think. Mm. Yeah.
We can split the rent.
Yes, whereas before you'd have to joust someone for it, would you?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you wanted a sort of high-ticket female, you know, your princesses, your baronesses.
Yeah.
Someone who had colours. Someone who was level enough they had colours that you might wear on your lance.
I mean, obviously, also, your marriage will bring peace for 100 years, so there's quite a lot going on.
There's a lot to factor in, isn't there?
There's a lot to unpack, and maybe that's why it needed to be dressed up with a bit more romance, really.
And you've only seen, like, a sketch. You've seen, like, a tiny little sketch.
Which is bollocks as well.
Which is absolute bollocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard tell of her golden tresses, my liege. Her tresses are the talk of Aquitaine.
Yeah, and Sir Sebastian isn't 7 foot tall, as it turns out, and doesn't have lightning coming out of his sword and rainbow farts. Yeah. It turns out he's a sort of hideous, sort of hunched, foul-smelling creature who just talks about badminton and nothing else.
It was a time when facial features were assumed to sort of tell you about the personality, weren't they?
Absolutely.
So you'd say, like, what's she like? You know, what's she like as a person? And they'd say, well, she has a high and wide forehead. And you'd be like, oh, yeah, she sounds great. She didn't really get on.
She has well-spaced nostrils.
And a noble cheek. Oh, brilliant.
A noble Habsburg cheek.
We're going to get on like a bloody house on fire because I've got cleft ears.
Handkerchiefs. What was it? There's a lot of, in the olden days, it was all about handkerchiefs, wasn't it? You'd drop a handkerchief.
Yes.
You'd do a joust.
You'd do a joust with a handkerchief tied to your lance. Or someone would
Is that what it was?
Drop a handkerchief at a ball.
The princess has farted on the handkerchief.
She farts on the handkerchief and she farts.
So you get her scent.
Exactly. And she also then farts on the right door of the wherever she's staying in the castle. So you follow the scent to her bedchambers for an illicit tryst, is my understanding.
It's like giving someone your hotel key and saying, room 315. Bring 20 magnums.
But it's got a bit of a knack to it. You'll have to, you probably have to try a few times. If you hold, what I found is, if you hold onto the metal door handle, you shove it down and then you go, so you're pushing in at that point.
But then you have to wait. If you don't wait, it's like it wants you to wait for just a moment and then
you have to wait.
You have to wait for the little green light to come on.
The green light to come on. Then you yank it back and out. Now, obviously, I'll hear, if you're struggling, I will hear you, but obviously I won't be able to come to the door because I'll be in bed. I'll be all hoisted up. So I'm going to start getting in the hoist probably in about 40 minutes. I'm going to watch the end of Newsnight. And then I'll start hoisting myself. So I won't be able to come and help you at the door. So you're going to have to get the knack.
You can go down to reception.
And also, I am out of little milks. So if you're going past reception anyway, they normally don't mind if you ask for some extra little milks.
And also some batteries for the TV remote. That's why I'm watching Newsnight. Obviously, I want to be watching Shallow Hal on Channel 5, but I can't turn over.
Now, if you go to reception, if you're really struggling, if you go to reception, they can reset the card. Now,
but they might need me to sign for it. I'm not sure because I'm, well, the room is booked in my father's name. That's where it's tricky.
And also, but at that point, both my hands will be in the plasty fin. the plasticated fin. They have the effect of a shark's fin, but they're plastic. And they're plasty fins.
I can't really walk because of the beak socks, so I wouldn't really be able to. And I will. It's simply I can't operate the remote on the telly. So if you could turn off the telly when you get, unless there's something good on, obviously, but you'll have to turn that off. Please.
Sometimes after Newsnight, they'll show a foreign language film, which can be quite good.
Now, I get very tired getting in and out of the costume. So it's possible if you do make it in, then I'll just be asleep. in that case, if you could not disturb me.
Well, if you open one of the small UHG milks, the scent will wake me.
Wake me gently. Because if I wake up and I see myself in that hoist with the flipper hands and the beak shoes and stuff, I will freak the fuck out all the time. Feel free to make yourself a cup of tea. The mini kettle, I always bring two dummy mini kettles. So the mini kettle in the middle is the real one. I've got a dummy mini kettle because I fear assassinations. I bring two dummy mini kettles with me wherever I go. just because of assassination threats.
I've been led to believe that I'm going to be killed by a kettle.
you know, I have to worry about these things. What with being the current Prime Minister of Britain?
Whoa! Yeah? Holy crap.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
Okay.
Ouch.
Oh, my God.
Ouch. They're going to be saying,
wow,
in number 10 right now.
Now, with romance, they often say that the element of surprise is important.
No, I think that's a military attacks.
That's military attacks.
Yeah, very similar.
That's all right. Armed police ambush sting operation. Yeah.
That'll explain my short-lived career. Similarly, in the SAS.
The pincer movement also is to be avoided in romance.
Okay.
Throwing a sort of stun grenade in first. Yeah. That's shouldn't do that.
The big no-nos, big romantic no-nos.
Yeah. Trying to win hearts and minds?
Never attempt to land romance in Asia as well. There's another one.
Never do romance on two fronts.
Right.
You can't just romance from the air. You have to have ground forces.
Ultimately, yes.
And you can't be romantic in Russia in the winter. Certainly if you're French.
I think that one probably does hold up.
That holds up.
Does your dog have a sense of romance? And I don't mean towards you. I mean towards other dogs.
No, it's the reverse. Because she's outrageously beautiful.
To other dogs or to you?
Well, I think the phrase he used answers that question, mate. I think it's choice of language and tone of voice.
She's the omni honey trap. She turns heads left, right, and centre of dogs, humans, cats, birds fall out of the sky. She's a wiry beauty, and just before she got done, before she got spayed, she was obviously giving off some kind of sexy musk, and good God, the level of attention she was getting in the park was intense. But even now that she's constantly getting approached by the lads, I would say more so than other female dogs.
And you look into the eyes of the dogs and you just go, come on guys, no dice here.
She's not keen.
We put an end to her.
Well, but even before then, she's not up for it, basically. She's got there's one dog called Hubble that she really, that my
Hubble?
Yeah.
as in the telescope?
Who's another she. And I think my wife thinks there's an element of romantic love between the two of these dogs, between Pam and Hubble. There's certainly great affection. But yeah, she's not interested in the D at all. She tucks her tail between her legs and she sort of tries to crawl up my back, basically, to hide.
Doesn't sound like romance to me. That sounds like she's being stalked by loads of horny dogs.
There's a bit of that, but I think dog romance lacks a bit of finesse on the whole. any sort of congress that involves mounting is unlikely. I mean, the bards don't sing about mounting, do they, on the whole? And lo, he did mount the lady. No, it doesn't.
There's no missionary, is there, for dogs? Dogs can't do missionary.
Oh, let's not talk about what sex positions dogs can do, Henry. There's literally one called, named after the way dogs have sex. So
The poodle grab. I haven't done that for years.
The poodle cup and flick. Yeah.
The Alsatian rumba.
The St. Bernard Mountain Rescue.
And the Pomeranian arse munch. Yeah, it's all there. It's all there for the taking.
I tell you, that St. Bernard, what he's got in that little thing, that little mini barrel, it's lube.
Henry.
Yeah?
For the sex-starved alpinist who's just abandoned somewhere in Mont Blanc. I just want to wank, but my dick is so dry.
I just want to try one last challenging position with my wife before we die of malnourishment and hypothermia. Just one last challenging position.
Oh my God. This is definitely the lewdest this podcast has got.
Well, should we have
I think we need a jingle for
this. I was just going to say, rather than cut it out, we can use our sticking plaster solution, which is just stick a jingle on it.
Sex jingle.
Sex jingle.
Okay, well, so what we need is from you guys, we need some genres, and then obviously a bit of, maybe Mike can voice up of voice.
What are we calling it?
Lewd content warning, something like that. Lewd content or?
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Grubby, grubby boys.
I feel like maybe the sort of traditional Greek folk music that accelerates.
Kind of balalaika.
Accelerating Greek.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Lewd content warning. Lewd content.
Because also, this is another mini Pompidou.
And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou.
A lot of children seem to listen to our podcast.
Yes. I told you, my nephew and my niece are among their number.
So I wondered whether we were sort of stop swearing and things.
We don't swear that much. Maybe we can beep out the... Can we monetize it and do a Patreon kids version? Hello, everyone! That kind of stuff.
I think that's why the kids aren't listening, though, is because we're not doing that.
Mr. Bungle's come along! He's got a butterfly! La, 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 la!
Mr. Bungle's brought his dog. It's a St. Bernard with a barrel full of lube.
Mr. Bungle and Mrs. Bungle are trying some challenging sex positions before they die.
They've got a high friction sex toy they can't use without the lube. Oh, it's too wide bore for Mr. Bungle. Oh, I think that would have the kids switching off in droves.
Oh my God.
In my guess.
Okay. Oh yeah, but I was thinking maybe we should bleep swears going forward.
I think Henry is the most potty mouthed of the three of us.
Oi, come on.
I'd say so.
I did an F bomb late earlier, but we can bleep it.
I think it's mainly when he's embodying Russell Crowe.
That's
I don't
true.
Feel
that's true. Yeah. That doesn't count.
You know that?
Yeah, I think yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And embodying is the word, yeah.
The end of the peer language feels all right in character, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And they've heard it all before.
These days.
Filthy mouth parents going about the place. Their teachers, they get it from their teachers.
Their teachers, you know, morning class 8, you bunch of fucksticks. That's how school is these days, isn't it? Yeah. There's a lack of respect on all sides.
Satire. Holy moly.
Oh.
Ouch.
Well, tell that to the education secretary, who I think might be Gavin Williamson.
Still but I'm is. Not. More's the pissy. Great. Hey?
More, of course, yes.
My cat Bluebell.
Yeah.
We had her, you know, spayed, whatever. But before we did that.
You put her on the dating scene.
Well, she had one summer. One sweet, sweet summer.
Like Grease.
Like the film Grease, you had one 90s, 50s nuance, sort of inflected summer.
Tell me more, tell me more.
She
lovely.
Was on Heat, and she would wail very, very, very noisily and disturbingly throughout the night. This is where it parts company with the film Grease. She would wail. And she
took, for John Travolta?
I was her John Travolta.
Uh-oh.
But she took an interest in me. And I'll never forget the breakfast.
But you're not a cat, Henry.
I know I'm not a cat. But I'll never forget. Well, we were from different sides of the species / tracks in that respect.
It's a bit like Grease.
A bit like Grease. But I'll never forget, because, you know, Bluebell, if you know her, Bluebell, you know, she's quite a prim cat.
Quite bashful.
Bashful. Quite conservative haircut. Mm. she's never had one. So conservative styling.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the breakfast when I was sitting there eating a boiled egg, and I looked up and Bluebell came in, and she was wearing a one-piece tight leather, black shiny leather outfit.
Come to bed eyes.
Come to bed eyes. She basically that summer was attracted, sexually attracted to me. And she would do a thing where she would back up to me. And she says, so she'd back up to me and look at me over her shoulder.
Then go on then.
Looking up at me. And she'd be wiggling her little bottom and her tail into my sort of leg. And I realized, and what I would do is I would just I'd get my foot, then I could sort of use her like a wah-wah pedal. So I'd just press down lightly on her bum, and she'd go,
oh, no.
And I could press down a bit longer, and she'd go, just looking at me like that. I go, and she was like this, like,
surely that would make her even more insatiable, cat. Right?
I think I did. It was very frustrating for her because she was just, oof. But then we got her spayed, and she returned to being a sort of cute little teddy bear. But she had that one summer I'll never forget.
Those summer nights.
So, what else did we miss in romance?
There's a whole world of teenage romance we didn't.
I think I've got some letters. It was sort of letters.
Horrifying.
Because a lot of it is you're wrestling with your own identity and who you think you are sort of at the same time.
Especially when the person you're writing the letter to is a 35-year-old Deutsche Bank banking executive.
Exactly. it just makes it very hard. It's very hard to express yourself and to work out who you are when they themselves are dealing with, you know, they're thinking about which markets to invest in and stuff. So if we're both going through so much.
Thinking about commodities.
I don't know which commodities to invest in.
Henry, have you heard of the dot-com bubble?
It might burst, I don't know. Oh, Henry, show me one of your little drawings again. Your drawings of Batman, it makes me feel so relaxed when I see the details which you've defined his muscles, Henrik.
Oh, Henrik.
Henrik, all the other men I know, they don't draw Batman like this. They go around in the broom-broom cars. You don't have a broom-broom car.
They just talk about the political instability of sub-Saharan Africa and the price of zinc, Henry. You'd never talk about these things.
Oh, it bores me so much, Henrik. Just tell me about Batman's relationship with Commissioner Gordon again. Tell me about it. I know Commissioner Gordon, he represents this law versus Batman. Tell me again, Batman is more, he's ambiguous morally, yes. Oh, Henrik, I don't want to play squash anymore with the business people.
Well, I think that's a great place to end romance. I So that was romance. Very good topic, I think. And that was sent in by Paul from Widnes.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, Paul. If you'd like to send in your own suggestions or even just any kind of correspondence whatsoever, please send it to
threebeansaladpod@gmail.com.
And we'll be sending Paul a single red rose, won't we? Thank him. A single, simple red rose.
We've had emails. Let's look at the emails. We've got an email from someone called Ron.
Hello, Ron.
He's from the US. He says, we in the US love mayo. So we talked about mayo last week.
We did disparagingly.
We in the US love mayo so much that not only do we have a giant tub in our fridge, we also like fake mayo that we call salad dressing. It's sweeter than mayo and it's made from chemicals. It has less raw eggs in it, and it was designed so you can take a macaroni salad out in the summer sun and not get botulism. Here is an old ad for it. It says to fill your pears with sugar-filled soybean oil mayo replacement. When I was a kid in the 80s, a cold cheese and mayo sandwich was a go-to. Wow. Well, there we are. Thank you, Ron.
I really enjoyed that.
He also says that everyone knows that the movie that defines the US in the 1980s, which is something we talked about again last week, is RoboCop.
Oh.
Great film.
Really?
Well,
great film.
Is he saying it defines America in the 80s?
That's what he says.
Set in not the 80s, set in the near future.
And it's also got a Paul Verhoeven. Is he Dutch, isn't he, the director? He's not American. Paul Verhoeven.
How does that bear on defining the America in the 80s?
I think I may have been showing off that I knew something.
Sounded like it, didn't it?
Yeah, sorry.
Ron also says, I'm listening to the condiments episode. I live in the US and I've worked for a British company for 16 years, so I know more than most. Mm. I had no idea what a brolly was. He writes, it's an effing umbrella, mate.
Crumbs.
So he does know what a brolly is. I mean, he's really undermined himself there. Okay.
Then you did 8 minutes on Branston Pickle that I barely knew was a thing. There is nothing like that here or anywhere else in the world. No details, by the way, other than it looks like shit in a sewer.
I think that's all the detail you need. And you could maybe just about argue that it's possibly a condiment. I think that's all you need to know, really.
He says, you so far mentioned brown sauce. That is also a UK thing only. Please give us real context or use words that exist outside the rock you guys float on.
Okay.
Oh, crumbs.
Bloody hell.
Got pretty strong towards the end, didn't it?
I mean, I put something in. I mean, my performance gave it maybe more than was there.
He doesn't have the subtlety of Spurbsy, does he? Spurbsy is a kind of scalpel. This guy is very much a breeze block over the head.
Just before we go on, we've got another email from a man called Freeb.
That sounds Freeb. Dangerously close to a sort of Spurbs.
I was just thinking, is that Spurbs
name?
Backwards? But it's not, is it?
Hello, Beans. Freeb from the old US of A here. I wanted to write and say I am most of the way through season one. I'm greatly enjoying the podcast and all the humour. I also had what I hope is a minor suggestion. This is not a show topic, just more of a general request.
Uh-oh.
Would you consider doing the podcast in English? I have absolutely no fucking clue what any of you are saying. Anyway, love the show, Freeb.
Freeb is very cut from the same. He's cut from the same cloth, isn't he? As old Spurbs. He drew us in, only to slap.
I mean, there's
us.
A definite theme with the emails this week. I don't know what's.
I in my mind, blowback, I assume that American people know all of the British words from classic British. Films and sort of
Fawlty Towers
and Mary Poppins and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I thought they loved all the charming British shit. I thought they'd be like, hey, the guy said brolly. They're so charming. I thought they just found us charming and just everything was just massively charming no matter what we do.
No, I think they possibly find us snide and irritating.
Yeah.
As it turns out.
Yeah. Oh, I saw someone on Twitter said something about they didn't know what Branston Pickle was. But they were going to go to the English or the British section of their supermarket. So do they have British sections? If they do, I'd quite like to know.
Bloody unbelievably depressing section of their supermarket. Oh, look, some meat pastes.
some salt. Some British salt. I wouldn't mind knowing, actually. I'm quite interested to know what they have in those British sections so we could talk about it. If someone wants to tell us.
Yeah, that would be interesting. So anyway, we had these kind of this blowback, as you say, Mike, from the US. But then we got another email, which I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from Alex. Hello, Beans. I just wanted to address Mike's question from the condiments episode where he queries, what do kids these days think of the US? Mm. I, an English 14-year-old girl, speaking on behalf of teenagers everywhere, am of the opinion that as a young child, the US seems so cool because of how it's portrayed in films and on the telly. Yeah. However, as you grow up, you slowly start to realise how shit it is.
Good grief. The whole thing.
And in fact, almost every teenager I know thinks the USA is shit too.
Oh, God.
They can keep their bloody double fridge doors to themselves. We don't care.
Good God.
Alex.
Basically, there's two forces, right? Because when you're a kid, it's basically Michael J. Fox, Michael J. Fox. USA is cool, Michael J. Fox. Then you start getting older, you go, there's like, oh, the health system. So then you've got Michael J. Fox on the one hand, then you've got, oh, the health system there. Oh, foreign policy. You've still got Michael J. Fox though, but then you go, oh, foreign policy. And you've got those things start to comp to sort of fight in your brain, don't they?
I had a similar thing. So at that age, maybe, I think she says she's 14, you start, for some reason, you start going, oh, but what about the invasion of Grenada? And what about the Sandinistas?
And then Michael J. Fox did have those cool built-up trainers, didn't he? Do you remember how they were built up at the back? But then there was the Bay of Pigs.
What I want to say to Alex is, I think you'll then go through that and you'll be where I am now, where you think, actually, one of those big fridges would be really good.
Yeah.
And I would like to see an alligator in the bayou one day.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then you realise it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Like anywhere else.
It's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
Oh, a little rock poking out of the sea is a bit of a mixed bag. Yeah. They're a bit of a mixed bag. Yeah. There's all sorts of mixed bags all over the place.
But some mixed bags have got more raisins and some mixed bags have got more nuts. Let's put it that way.
That's very true. But some people are more into raisins and some people are more into, you know, want the crunch.
And some mixed bags will have a salted nut in there, even though the other nuts are just plain roasted.
But what I want to say to Alex is, you know, I'm not saying you are going to grow up and like the US more. You might hold on to that hatred for the rest of your life, and good luck to you.
I'm hoping she comes round to at least ambivalence, I would say.
Yeah. But who are we to tell the next generation what they should like and not like?
Oh, no. Oh, God, no.
We also had an email from Martin. Bonjour, Beans, and greetings from Luxembourg.
Mm. Bonjour.
It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Your most recent episode and its hypothesizing of a double product deal in Tesco brought to mind one of the most memorable supermarket experiences of my life. The year was 2012. I had just graduated from uni and I was on the cusp of starting my postgraduate degree. My life in the summer between two degrees was characterized primarily by two fundamentally opposing factors: my unending appetite for food and booze, and my complete lack of funds with which to satiate this appetite. Mm. We've all been there.
So tell us all the time.
Yeah.
That's when it happened. I walked into our local Tesco and found that they were running a promotion of mythical proportions. Buy one, get two free.
Whoa.
Wow.
You may want to take a moment to let that sink in. You did indeed read that right. Buy one, get two free.
You didn't even need, you know what, in that situation, you didn't even need the first one, almost, you know what I mean?
Just take the free one.
The two free ones. But you've almost got too many. I'd give, you know what I'd do? I'd buy one, get two free, sell the first one back at half the price I bought the first one for.
And then buy it again and get with the money that you got from selling it, and then you got two more free ones.
You got two more free ones. Do you know what I mean? Pretty soon, I'm Tesco's, pretty much. You know what I mean? Effectively. You end up walking out of that place and you're Tesco's.
And it'd be exponential, wouldn't it? So it'd probably happen in less than 24 hours.
Yeah. And if you get a small team of people on it, you're basically, that. It's called, it's a bit like what a certain kinds of parasitic insects can do. Then going through your ear hole, take over the whole body, end up.
Yeah.
You can do that with the Tesco's.
But you get a free jumbo bag of Quavers into the bargain.
Exactly. It's even better.
Well, best of luck to you. Anyone trying to do that?
Was that his anecdote? It was just it. That was it. It was just, he found there was a buy one best, but get two free.
Are you saying that isn't a good enough anecdote?
I think we may have lowered the bar on what a good anecdote is because of the nature of the content that we produce. Maybe that's why people like us. They go, bloody hell, if that's content.
I do have a story.
If that's content, I can dust off my buy one, get two, three anecdote that got me chucked out of that wedding.
Are you saying that Martin included it in a best man speech?
I think he might have done.
So as a counterpoint to that, Martin, I want to say thanks for emailing. Mm. I enjoyed your anecdote.
I enjoyed it.
No. Sorry, that was a really good anecdote. You know.
No, you can't reel that back in, Henry. You can't backpedal like that.
I think he's shone a harsh light on your own anecdotes.
Can I say what I like to do?
That's what you're struggling with.
It's not that. I like to poke a bit fun at the anecdotes that come in, mm-hmm. a bit like a yeah. bad father.
Right.
In the sense that I think it's just affectionate, but my son never knows that till the day he dies.
So you're saying that is it on your deathbed or on Martin's deathbed?
No, he predeceases me. The son predeceases me.
Right. Okay. So the father has had ample opportunity at every turn.
I had so many opportunities to let him know face to face that it was affectionate. But I just kept on poking. And actually...
Even at the deathbed
itself.
Even at the
deathbed, I just slightly poked his final anecdote. No, it is affectionate. But for some reason, just like that bad father, I can't bring myself to say it was a good anecdote. I just can't bring myself to say it. No. Yeah.
The next email is from someone called Michaela. And Mike, for you and me, I think this is a horrifying email. Okay. And I think might unlock something in Henry that we are not going to be able to put back in the box.
Uh-oh.
And it could actually destroy the podcast and our friendship.
Oh, holy wow. Shit. Okay, let's do it. Roll the dice.
Because, by the way, in my mind, the podcast outlives the friendship with us.
Oh, yeah.
In my mind, yeah.
It will end the friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the podcast will keep going. Do you know what I mean?
But this email is...
We've never been able to record it physically together, have we? We've got the live thing coming up, but we've not... That'll be the first time. We might just start walloping each other like Sting and the Police. Those. I mean, we don't know how it's going to turn out.
What happened with Sting and the Police? Sorry,
They used to have bust-ups all the time, like physical fights seconds before they go on stage.
Did they ever have to call the police?
Ooh.
Hello.
Hello. Nice. We are comedy professionals.
We are today.
I don't know. Why'd you ask? Anyway. What?
Michaela writes, "Hi, Beans. In a futile attempt to find his KFC commercial, I Googled Henry. And subsequently found out that he's very attractive. This changes absolutely everything, Michaela. P.S. Topic idea, what will hell be like?" Well, now we know, because it's this email, Michaela. You have unlocked in Henry. You can see in his little face.
Can I say, I'm currently sitting down, but I do have a skip in my stride, even though I'm not striding currently. I've got a skip in my sit. I'm literally feeling... My little cheeks are just, I can just feel them shining, they're glowing.
I think Henry cleans up pretty good, you know.
I'm not saying she's not right.
And also, the photos she would have seen, I have also been photographed by a photographer and a person who does many other things by the name of Idil Sukan.
Mm, oh, she's
who's
good.
Who's very, very good at taking, you kind of turn up sort of puffy-faced, shiny, jowly, hair in the wrong places and not in the right places.
Yeah.
And she will do something fucking magical to you. And she injects a great amount of sex appeal into pretty much every photograph she takes of a human being.
Yeah, so what Mike is doing is he's trying to take the gloss off this for me, which is, okay. I had a little moment. I was just a little moment, and it probably was a bit too much. I probably shouldn't have enjoyed that moment for too much longer, actually. Yeah. So thanks. So Mike's taken the gloss off. By referring to that, I was almost certainly heavily photoshopped in that image. Years ago,
by someone who's really good at it too.
Years ago, I once did a gig, right, where there was a photo. I had one quite sexy photo of me. It was basically before I went completely bald and embraced it and shaved it all off. So there's one where I had just enough hair going on at the front where from a certain angle, it looked like I had a really thick head of sort of glossy Mediterranean sort of hair.
Right.
And I was right up close to the camera and my head was on an angle and it was devastatingly sexy for some reason. It was a complete trick of the light, it just wasn't in any way accurate. But it was just...
And could it be that Michaela has seen this photograph?
Because I once did a gig where, after the gig, a whole load of women came up to me and said, look, because the promoter had used that old photo and said, you used to be a lot more attractive than you are now.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
And... they didn't say it exactly in those words, but it was strongly implied.
Yeah.
I think they laughed at me and said, it's something like you disgust us. Along those lines.
Well,
oh dear.
That was a nice email of you to send, yeah, Michaela. Thanks, Michaela. And Henry is a very handsome man.
Thanks, Michaela.
If you do want to send us emails on any topic, or if you want to respond to anything you've heard in today's episode, 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. You can. I think that's it. I think that's it.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Do we need to say anything about the live stream, or are we have we said?
Oh
that
yes.
Repeatedly?
Good.
Is it tomorrow? No, it's not. Sorry, take that out.
It's almost tomorrow, though.
It's a week tomorrow.
No, it's not. It's a week tomorrow.
Is it?
Yeah.
Unless you're not listening to this today, in which case it isn't.
Yeah. It might be in the past.
And also, people will listen to the podcast on different days anyway, so cut all of this out.
But it is, or will be, or was on the 2nd of September.
Yes, and I'll put a link to the tickets in the show description. If you want to watch our live show, down the live stream link, you'll see Henry unphotoshopped.
Mm.
Oh.
And that's going to be a very powerful
experience.
In a way
that a lot of people prefer him, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Grissy.
Grizzled.
Sinewy.
Yes, we're going to be getting some lighting, aren't we? Getting some quite sexy lighting, aren't we, for that show?
Yeah, pitch black.
It's going to be pitch black. Like that restaurant in the dark, but for a live stream.
Yeah. That's right.
It's going to be indistinguishable from listening to the podcast.
Well, that's what people want. They want, when they come to see something live, they want to see the podcast experience. So the show will actually just be an iPhone sitting on a table and loads of headphones.
Brilliant. And then at the end, we release 1,000 cassowaries into the room. And we are seen laughing from the balcony as everyone is torn to shreds.
Yeah. That's the dream.
Until next time, dear friends, goodbye.
Cheerio.
Bye.